Week 2 of both the NFL and college football seasons are officially behind us. The NBA Conference Finals are in full swing, and the greatest basketball player of all time is making his mark in yet another sport. We've had lots of action across the sports world since Episode 1 last week, and I'm here to break it all down and give my insight on what to expect this upcoming weekend. Are the Lakers and Heat still my picks to reach the NBA Finals? What does the landscape of fantasy football look like after a wave of catastrophic injuries? And what does the SEC's return to college football this weekend do to the rest of the country? I've got answers to these questions and many, many more on this second episode of Banzett's Beats.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang! Michigan at the 41. What a hit! Ball's free! On the ground! South Carolina deserves to have it, and they do! Jordan, open. Chicago with the lead!
1 foot for the win!
Hello everyone and welcome to the second episode of Banzett's Beats, Stone Cold Sports Blog's weekly podcast recapping the previous week's games, answering listener-submitted questions, and previewing upcoming events around the sports world. I'm your host, Jay Banzett. Before we get started, I want to offer my condolences to the family of the Chicago Bears' late legendary running back, Gale Sayers, who passed away early Wednesday morning after battles with both dementia and Alzheimer's. Only playing 7 professional seasons, all in Chicago, the Kansas Comet, as he was nicknamed, earned him 4 Pro Bowl appearances, 5 first-team All-Pro honors, the 1969 NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award, the 1965 NFL Rookie of the Year Award, and he twice led the league in rushing yards. Sayers was a member of the 1960s All-Decade Team, NFL's 75th Anniversary Team, and NFL 100th Anniversary Team, and he was the only player on the 75th anniversary team to be honored at 2 positions, at both running back and kick returner. His famous number 40 is retired by the Chicago Bears, and the University of Kansas, his alma mater, retired his number 48. Some say he's one of the 2 or 3 best backs of all time, and he'll certainly be missed around the football community. Rest in peace, Gale Sayers. On a happier note in the NFL, we've officially made it through 2 weeks of play without a single player testing positive for the coronavirus. Let's go. It's honestly astonishing how this has happened, MLB, because Major League Baseball screwed up their start a couple weeks ago. And I hope that the NFL players both learn from what the MLB did wrong and see how well they're doing themselves right now, and they continue to handle themselves appropriately. Speaking of the NFL, last weekend was loaded with excitement across the league, and we're starting to learn a lot more about each team. On Thursday Night Football, the battle for Ohio saw the Cleveland Browns take down Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals 35-30. Baker Mayfield finally connected with Odell Beckham for a touchdown pass. It doesn't seem like those happen very often these days. Odell finished with 4 catches for 74 yards and a touchdown. Joe Burrow threw 61 passes, the second most in history by a rookie. He threw for 316 yards and 3 touchdowns. But the real story of the game was the Cleveland Browns rushing attack. Nick Chubb carried the ball 22 times for 124 yards and 2 touchdowns. Kareem Hunt carried 10 times for 86 yards and another touchdown, and the team as a whole carried for 215 yards compared to Cincinnati's 68. That was the real story of the game. I watched that entire game on national television on Thursday, and really, Cleveland dominated the line of scrimmage basically on both sides of the ball, and they're starting to play like we expect them to play. Cleveland is supposed to be in the playoff contention with Odell Beckham and Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and Odell and Jarvis Landry and Austin Hooper and Denzel Ward on defense with Myles Garrett. They've got talent, and they should finally be in the playoff picture. I don't know what's their deal. Maybe last week is how they're going to get themselves on track, but they moved to 1-1 while the Cincinnati Bengals moved to 0-2 after 2 losses by a combined 8 points. Then moving on to Sunday, the best game probably of the season so far, saw the Dallas Cowboys defeat the Atlanta Falcons 40-39 on a game-winning buzzer-beating 46-yard field goal by Greg Zuerlein. May I remind you, the Cowboys were down 20-0 at the end of the first quarter. They were down three scores at the end of the first quarter and were down 29-10 at halftime. Then Dallas stormed back in the second half, scoring two touchdowns in the third quarter and two in the fourth. But the main story of the game was the onside kick by Greg Zuerlein. He did not use a tee. Kicked the ball sideways off the ground, and it just spun a little bit, almost like a golf ball just trickling down the green towards the hole. And for some unknown reason, five Falcons stood around the football and watched it just move. Some actually moved back to give it space. They watched the ball travel ever so slowly across the 10-yard line, and then the Cowboys jumped on it. And my Cowboys, I don't know how we did that, but the Falcons, Stephen A. Smith has called them the dumbest team in the history of the modern era NFL. I certainly can agree. That's ridiculous. They just obviously did not know the rule that you can jump on the ball at any point as the receiving team, but the team that's kicking off has to wait 10 yards. I don't get it. Greg Zuerlein is the OG. Kicked the onside kick that we recovered. Kicked the game-winning field goal. Cowboys win by one. Avoid an 0-2 start. Dak Prescott threw for 450 yards, scored three times on the ground. That's the first time in the history of the league a quarterback has thrown for 400 or more yards and scored three touchdowns on the ground. That was pretty remarkable. Calvin Ridley caught seven passes for 109 yards and two touchdowns for Atlanta. He continues to be the number one receiver in fantasy football these days. And that game was a barn burner. 79 points combined, no overtime needed. Just ridiculous. Moving on, Tom Brady got his first dub with the Bucs, 31-17 over the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers have lost Christian McCaffrey to IR for a couple weeks with an ankle injury, so we'll see how they handle that. The Giants lost Saquon Barkley for the entire year. Barkley's on my fantasy team. I'm feeling this. He tore his right ACL. The Bears went on to win 17-13, and they are 2-0. Who would have ever thought that they'd be tied with the Packers for the top of the division? And speaking of the Packers, they doubled up the Lions 42-21. Aaron Jones went off, 18 carries for 168 yards and two touchdowns to lead the team in rushing, and then four receptions for 68 yards and another touchdown to lead the team in receiving. So he's absolutely going off. Davante Adams missed time with a hamstring injury, so Jones picked up the slack plus some. And the Packers are 2-0. The Lions are 0-2, looking a little clueless at the moment. The Titans defeated the Jaguars 33-30 on a Steven Gostkowski field goal with 96 seconds left. Gardner Minshew completed 30 of 45 passes for 339 yards and three touchdowns. James Robinson, who is on my fantasy team, if he's available in your league, go pick him up because he's the only dude getting carries in Jacksonville. Carried 16 times for 102 yards and a touchdown. And for the winning Titans, Jonnu Smith went off four receptions for 84 yards and two touchdowns as a tight end. Ryan Tannehill threw four touchdowns through the air. He continues to have a phenomenal start to his season. And his Titans are 2-0 while the Jags fall to 1-1. In Indianapolis, we really saw the most shocking result of the weekend. The Vikings were 3.5-point underdogs, and myself and others bet that they would not only cover that but win outright, and instead they lose by 17 to the Indianapolis Colts. Phillip Rivers only throws for 214 yards and a touchdown, but Jonathan Taylor has a good day in his second career, or I guess his first career start, 26 carries, 101 yards, and a touchdown for Indianapolis. And Mo Alie-Cox, the replacement tight end for Jack Doyle, and Indianapolis caught five passes for 111 yards. So if he's available and you need a tight end in fantasy, go pick him up. But the Vikings are how poorly the Vikings played is just the real story here. They scored 11 points with a healthy Adam Thielen, with a healthy Dalvin Cook, and a healthy Kirk Cousins. 11 points. They scored 3 points in the first three quarters of the game, and that's just not going to get it done. So I don't know what a lot of people. I picked Minnesota to win the NFC North a couple weeks ago, and I know I'm not alone when I did that. So I don't know what's going on with Minnesota, but they've got to get their stuff together before they just start looking like maybe one of the worst teams in the league. Goodness gracious. Moving on to the AFC East, the 2-0 Buffalo Bills defeated the Miami Dolphins 31-28. Josh Allen continues to be the early story of the season. He completed 24 of 35 passes for 415 yards and 4 touchdowns. His main new target, his new toy to play with, Stephon Diggs, caught 8 passes for 153 yards and a touchdown. And the Bills narrowly escaped the Dolphins by 3 in a game that saw a 30-minute rain delay in the middle of the second quarter. So that was a little wonky, but the Bills escaped. I talked about injuries earlier to Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey, but no team saw as many injuries as the San Francisco 49ers. Goodness gracious. They lost Jimmy Garoppolo to an ankle injury, Nick Bosa to a torn ACL, and Raheem Mostert to a, I believe it's a hamstring injury. They still beat speaking of the worst team in football, they beat the Jets 31-13, even with all those injuries. Sam Darnold actually played really, really well for New York, completed 21 of 32 passes for 179 yards and a touchdown. He just has no help, and I feel really bad for him. I've kind of given him crap the past couple years because his production isn't there, but I saw him make a throw. I don't know if y'all have seen it. Escapes pressure right up the middle of the pocket, rolls to his left, throws a Mahomes-style, like, sidearm absolute bullet threw it to Braxton Berrios, yeah, on a slant. Just an absolute beautiful throw by Darnold. But the San Francisco 49ers were able to get the win regardless. The LA Rams got off to a 2-0 start, defeating the Eagles 37-19 in Philly. Jared Goff completed 20 of 27 passes for 267 yards and 3 touchdowns, all to Tyler Higbee, the tight end, who, not many people know this, he finished the last 5 games last year averaging over 100 yards receiving as a tight end. That's pretty remarkable, and he continues to be one of Goff's favorite targets throughout this early part of the season, along with Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods out wide, plus combining Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, probably two of the 5 best defensive players in the league, to that offense. The Rams are certainly a good team, and they tore up my Cowboys 2 weeks ago, so they're doing pretty well. And speaking of tearing up teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers continued another dominant start. They defeated the Denver Broncos 26-20. Ben Roethlisberger threw for 311 yards and 2 touchdowns. James Conner dominated that backfield and stayed healthy, carrying 16 times for 106 yards and a touchdown. And the Steelers defense once again proves it's the best team in football, or the best defense in football, excuse me. I do not want to play that Pittsburgh defense. They're pretty nasty. Moving out west, the Arizona Cardinals defeated the Washington football team 30-15. Kyler Murray completed 26 of 38 passes for 286 yards and a touchdown. Terry McLaurin for the Washington football team caught 7 passes for 125 yards and a touchdown against Patrick Peterson. That was pretty impressive. But overall, that's pretty much what we expected out there. What would have been the upset of all upsets almost happened, but not quite. The Chiefs defeated the Chargers 23-20 in overtime. The storyline right now out of that game is Tyrod Taylor's lung being punctured by a team doctor when giving Taylor a painkiller through the chest due to rib pain. But immediately after the game, the story was how Justin Herbert played as a rookie, making his first ever start against a Super Bowl defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs. Herbert completed 22 of 33 passes for 311 yards and a touchdown, also ran for one on the ground. But Patrick Mahomes is just, he's too good. And then Harrison Butker iced the game with a 53-yarder in overtime that got called back due to a false start, a 58-yarder that he made that got taken away due to a timeout, and then finally another 58-yarder in overtime that gave him the win by 3. Moving to Texas, the Ravens defeated the Houston Texans 33-16. Deshaun Watson continues to show that he doesn't really have much help out there, completing 25 of 36 passes for 275 yards and a touchdown. the Texans actually held the Ravens pretty much in check offensively. Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown didn't really do anything. Brandon Cooks showed up big in his first healthy game with the Texans, catching five passes for 95 yards. And the Texans, their brutal schedule just doesn't get any easier. They started at Kansas City. They got Baltimore last week, and now they're at Pittsburgh. So probably the three best teams in the AFC back-to-back-to-back for the Houston Texans. If you're a Texans fan or have a Texans player in fantasy, brighter days are ahead. They're not coming this week, but certainly it honestly cannot get worse than Chiefs, Ravens, Steelers back-to-back-to-back. So keep your hopes up over there. And then in what ended up being probably the best game of the weekend, including that Chiefs game, was on Sunday Night Football, where the Seattle Seahawks defeated the New England Patriots 35-30. At the very end of regulation, when Cam got stuffed at the 1 yard line trying to score a touchdown, he threw for 397 yards and a touchdown, scored two more, I believe, on the ground. And Julian Edelman went off, had eight catches for 179 yards. That was kind of unexpected. But what continues to be the story early on this season is Russell Wilson. He completed 21 of 28 passes for 288 yards, five touchdowns, and a pick, while running five times for 39 yards. He is unstoppable. I mentioned last episode that he had as many incompletions as touchdowns in week one, four. This time he goes seven incompletions and five touchdowns. So that is 11 incompletions and nine touchdowns on the season. That is remarkable. On the ground, Chris Carson had a good day, 17 carries for 72 yards. DK Metcalf beat Stephon Gilmore for a touchdown, a 54-yard touchdown, excuse me. That is the first time that Stephon Gilmore, the reigning Defensive Player of the Year, has allowed a touchdown since the 2018 season. And Metcalf is a Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson Jr. He's ridiculous. He's only going to get better. And what's even more interesting is that Seattle's five touchdown passes all went to five different receivers. Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, David Moore, Chris Carson, and Freddie Swain all caught touchdown passes from Russell Wilson. But New England, even though they lost, they played about as well as you could hope. Cam carried 11 times for 47 yards and two touchdowns, threw for the 397 that I talked about. But the issue just continues to be who besides Cam is going to give them any offense on the ground. Sony Michel carried seven times for 19 yards. Rex Burkhead went six times for 2 yards. J.J. Taylor went one time for negative 1 yards. So everybody besides Cam who ran the football carried 20 yards total. Cam had more than double that with 47. So New England's got to find somebody else who can help them on the ground, because the aerial attack finally seems to be coming in to the works, with Edelman having 179 yards, Demir Byrd having 6 for 72, N'Keal Harry 8 for 72, and Burkhead had 4 for 47 through the air. So New England, although they lost, they got a lot to get out of it. Seattle just continues to prove that they're probably the best team in the NFC right now. And then on Monday, the Las Vegas Raiders are off to a 2-0 start, defeating the favored New Orleans Saints 34-24 in the first game ever in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. That was pretty cool to see. Josh Jacobs went off on the ground for 88 yards. Darren Waller was the real story of the game, though. The tight end for the Raiders had 12 catches for 105 yards and a touchdown. And obviously the absence of Michael Thomas hurt the Saints, but they have a lot more issues than just the offense. The defense gave up 34 points to a Raiders offense that, yeah, it's good, but it's not the best in the league. So New Orleans, getting back Michael Thomas will certainly help, but they've got some more room to grow than just on offense. Looking towards this weekend, I've got three games to keep an eye out for. The first is the 2-0 Chiefs at the 2-0 Baltimore Ravens. This is the game of the year with the best teams in the league. And I mean, there will be no game between better teams all regular season long. So 8:15 on ESPN is a heavyweight fight for Monday Night Football this week. The second game isn't getting nearly as many headlines, but the 2-0 Las Vegas Raiders that I just talked about are at the 1-1 New England Patriots. That's a sneaky good game. New England lost, obviously, at the Horn last week in Seattle, and Vegas beat the Saints by 10. John Gruden, the head coach for the Raiders, versus Bill Belichick, the head coach for the Patriots. They're about as different as personalities can get in this league. So that game will be interesting. It's 1 o'clock on CBS. And then the third game is Fox's Game of the Week with my 1-1 Dallas Cowboys on the road to take on Russell Wilson and the 2-0 Seattle Seahawks. The over-under for this game is 55.5 points, the highest in the league this weekend, and for good reason. So I'll go ahead and give you my predictions for every game, including the game tonight in Jacksonville. I've got the Jags beating the Dolphins 27-20, the Chargers beating the Panthers 31-17, the Seahawks winning that Game of the Week 38-35 over the Cowboys, the Falcons beating the Bears 27-17, the Bills over the Rams 31-27, the Browns over the Washington Football Team 34-28, the Titans beating the Vikings 24-13, the Patriots defeating the Raiders 27-24, giving the Raiders their first loss of the season. The Giants actually winning an upset game this weekend over the 49ers 17-14. The Bengals getting their first dub of the season over the hapless Eagles 28-24. The Steelers dominating the Texans 24-13. The Colts beating, speaking of hapless, the Jets 20-14. I wouldn't be surprised if that game's more like 28-7 in favor of the Colts, but I'll be nice today. The Bucks on the road over the Denver Broncos 28-17. The Cardinals absolutely going off this weekend. I think that'll happen. They'll beat the Lions 42-24. And then Sunday Night Football, I've got the Packers beating the Saints in New Orleans 38-28. And then in that game of the year on Monday Night Football, I've got Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs losing to Lamar Jackson and the Ravens 41-38. And it's going to be interesting. That game is going to be extremely high scoring, even though both teams have a decent defense. The Ravens defense, obviously, a little bit better than the Chiefs. That game, basically, whoever gets to 40 first is going to win, but I'm not even sure 40 is going to be enough. And I will say this week will look a heck of a lot different through all the injuries we saw last weekend. As I mentioned earlier, Saquon Barkley, Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas, Paris Campbell, Malik Hooker, and Cortland Sutton all tore their ACL last week and are out for the season. Christian McCaffrey, Drew Locke, Jimmy Garoppolo, Raheem Mostert, Tevin Coleman, Sterling Shepard, Le'Veon Bell, Marlon Mack, and Blake Jarwin are all on the IR the past 2 weeks and are expected to miss a significant number of weeks, 3 at minimum with the new rule this year. And these absences leave opportunities for others to fill, though, and it's my job here to inform you fantasy football owners on who you need to pick up in each scenario. So I'll go through my best waiver wire pickups for week 3 in the NFL. So the top quarterbacks to pick up that are rostered in fewer than 50% of ESPN leagues this week are Ryan Tannehill of the Titans, Gardner Minshew of the Jaguars, and Jared Goff of the Rams. The best running back options are Devontae Freeman, who signed with the New York Giants yesterday and will be their top back in the coming weeks, Mike Davis, who will replace Christian McCaffrey in the Panthers backfield, and Jerick McKinnon, who will take over for both Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman, who are on IR in San Francisco. My favorite wide receiver waiver wire targets this week are Corey Davis of the Titans, Marquez Valdes-Scantling of the Packers, and Keelan Cole Sr. of the Jaguars. And Cole actually ranks as the wide receiver 17 on the season in PPR leagues with 33.5 points through 2 weeks. I picked him up this week, probably will start him next week. And it's just amazing that a guy who is in the top 20 at his position at a wide receiver or running back position is still available in over 50% of leagues. So if you need somebody to go pick up a receiver, Keelan Cole is your guy. Tight ends to consider this week are Austin Hooper of the Cleveland Browns, Jack Doyle of the Indianapolis Colts, who is hurt right now, but he'll come back and get all of his targets back from Mo Alie-Cox, and Dalton Schultz of the Dallas Cowboys. And I advise you to please stay away from the Jordan Reed hype. George Kittle is coming back this week from his quad injury and should get most of, if not all of, his targets back in San Francisco when he's healthy. So do not pick up Jordan Reed. He is not going to be worth it more than this week if Kittle doesn't play. And certainly Kittle is going to play in 2 weeks. So Jordan Reed, avoid. There's no need to pick him up. Moving from the waiver wire to primary starters, let's get into my top 10 players at each position this week. At quarterback, Russell Wilson is the best quarterback to play this week. He's got the Dallas Cowboys, followed by Kyler Murray against the Lions, Lamar Jackson versus the Chiefs, Gardner Minshew versus the Miami Dolphins. He's my quarterback 4 this week, and he's still available in over 50% of leagues, so pick him up. Dak Prescott versus the Seahawks, Cam Newton versus the Raiders, Patrick Mahomes versus the Ravens, Josh Allen versus the Rams. He continues to be a story this early in the season. Aaron Rodgers versus the Saints, Matt Ryan versus the Chicago Bears. There's my top 10 quarterbacks to play this week. Avoid Deshaun Watson versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. I already talked about how good the Steelers' defense is. Do not play Deshaun Watson this week, and do not play Drew Brees versus Green Bay this week, assuming Michael Thomas remains out with a high ankle sprain. I don't think he'll play, but if he does, I still probably wouldn't even play Drew Brees. At running back, I've got Alvin Kamara versus the Green Bay Packers as my top running back this week, followed by Josh Jacobs versus the Patriots, Ezekiel Elliott versus the Seahawks, Dalvin Cook versus the Titans, Aaron Jones versus the Saints, Miles Sanders versus the Bengals, Austin Eckler versus the Panthers, Jonathan Taylor of the Colts versus the New York Jets, Chris Carson versus the Dallas Cowboys, Melvin Gordon against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Those are my top 10 running backs this week. Please stay away. I advise you stay away from Todd Gurley versus the Chicago Bears and David Johnson versus the Steelers. David Johnson is going to do absolutely nothing this week. I am convinced of it, so stay away from him and Todd Gurley. Moving on to wide receivers, DeAndre Hopkins versus the Lions is the clear-cut wide receiver one this week. He's going to absolutely tear apart that helpless Detroit secondary. He's followed by Amari Cooper versus the Seahawks, Julio Jones versus the Chicago Bears, Juju Smith-Schuster versus the Texans, DK Metcalf versus the Cowboys, Michael Thomas if he's healthy. They will not play him if he is not fully healthy, and if he is fully healthy and playing, he needs to be in your lineup. So if Michael Thomas does indeed play, put him in your lineup at wide receiver number six. And if he doesn't play, my number six receiver is Tyreek Hill versus the Ravens. Adam Thielen versus the Titans is my wide receiver seven, followed by Calvin Ridley versus the Bears, who continues to be the number one receiver in fantasy, so we'll see how long he keeps that up. Followed by Mike Evans versus the Broncos at nine, and Allen Robinson versus the Falcons at 10. I advise you to stay away from DJ Moore of the Panthers. He hasn't really done much this season. And Robbie Anderson seems to be getting most of Teddy Bridgewater's targets. So avoid DJ Moore. And Stephon Diggs, I say avoid this week simply because he's going to have Jalen Ramsey on him the entire game when the Bills play the Rams. And Jalen Ramsey is probably the best corner in football. So, excuse me, second best corner in football behind Stephon Gilmore. So do not play Stephon Diggs this week. At tight end, Travis Kelce versus the Ravens is my tight end number one, followed by Darren Waller versus the Patriots, Mark Andrews versus the Chiefs, Tyler Higbee versus the Bills, the man who caught three touchdowns last weekend, Zach Ertz versus the Bengals, Evan Ingram versus the 49ers, Jared Cook versus the Packers, George Kittle, if he plays, versus the Giants, Hunter Henry versus the Panthers, and Jonnu Smith versus the Minnesota Vikings. Smith went off last weekend for two touchdowns and 84 yards. Expect more of the same this weekend because Minnesota cannot seem to cover tight ends right now. Avoid Noah Fant versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Hayden Hurst versus the Chicago Bears. They've got bad matchups this week at linebacker, so avoid Noah Fant and Hayden Hurst. Moving on to the defenses, I've got the Bucs versus the Broncos as the best defense to have this week, followed by the 49ers, the Titans, Steelers, Colts, Jaguars, Cardinals, Browns, Bengals, and Chargers. At kicker, Justin Tucker is the best available to play this week, followed by Harrison Butker, Greg Zuerlein, Jason Myers, Younghoe Koo, Will Lutz, Mason Crosby, Chris Boswell, Sam Sloman, and Michael Badgley. It's going to be a crazy weekend in the NFL, and I cannot wait, especially for that Monday night game between the Chiefs and the Ravens. It's going to be the best game of the year, and all eyes need to be watching that for sure. Shifting from the professional ranks to the college game, let's take a look back at what happened around the world of college football last weekend. Number one, Clemson dominated as usual against the Citadel with a 49-0 victory. But the fun fact here, the Citadel covered the 50.5-point spread that was put on them. The Citadel declined a running clock in the second half and still covered. That's pretty remarkable. Let's give the Citadel some credit there. They covered the spread against the number one team in the country and did not accept the running clock that Dabo Swinney wanted to give them. So kudos to the Citadel Bulldogs. I know, Bo Watts, if you're listening, you're going to like hearing that. Notre Dame thrashed South Florida 52-0. Oklahoma State, my playoff pick, struggled mightily at home versus Tulsa before winning 16-7. Cincinnati got its season off strong with a 35-point victory over 0-3 Austin Peay. Central Florida went into Atlanta and dominated Georgia Tech in the fourth quarter to win 49-21. 17th ranked Miami went to 18th ranked Louisville and won by 13 points in the first ranked matchup of the season. Louisiana Lafayette almost got complacent. They beat Iowa State the week before on the road, beat a ranked team on the road, second time in program history, and they almost lost to Georgia State this past weekend before winning 34-31 in overtime. Appalachian State only scored 7 points in a 10-point L at the Marshall Herd, and the 25th-ranked Pittsburgh Panthers beat Syracuse 21-10. In non-ranked matchups, Navy, the story of the weekend, Navy overcame a 24-point halftime deficit to beat Tulane on a last-second field goal, 27-24. Navy pitched a shutout in the second half, scored 27 points in the second half. That's pretty remarkable for a team that lost 52-3 in week one to BYU. Boston College dominated Duke in Durham in what was Jeff Hafley's first game as head coach. SMU hung 65 points on North Texas, and NC State won a barn burner in Raleigh versus Wake Forest 45-42. Looking ahead to this weekend, the SEC is back. Let's get it. They're finally giving us some ranked teams to watch in the top 10. Number 5, Florida, travels to the Grove to take on Ole Miss. 23rd-ranked Kentucky heads to the Plains to face 8th-ranked Auburn. The defending national champion LSU Tigers host Mississippi State. Number 4, Georgia plays at Arkansas. The 2nd-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide face the Missouri Tigers in Eli Drinkwitz's first game as Missouri's head coach. Vanderbilt travels to 10th-ranked Texas A&M at Kyle Field, and South Carolina will open up against 16th-ranked Tennessee at Willie B this weekend at 7:30. Other ranked matchups around the country to see include Kansas State at number 3, Oklahoma, number 13, UCF at East Carolina, Louisiana Lafayette versus Georgia Southern, number 24, Louisville, looks to rebound against number 21, Pittsburgh, 8th-ranked Texas heads to Lubbock to take on Texas Tech, a sneaky good 22nd-ranked Army team is on the road at number 14, Cincinnati, West Virginia heads to Stillwater to face the 15th-ranked Cowboys of Oklahoma State. Florida State heads south to play number 12, Miami, in what a game. Florida State heads south to play 12th-ranked Miami in a game that I hope and I pray, please, will be competitive, because that rivalry, when it's strong, is one of the best in the country. And number 20, Virginia Tech, finally gets to play a game hosting NC State in Blacksburg on Saturday. In my opinion, the best game of the weekend is the Kentucky at Auburn game. But besides that, I don't expect much close action in the SEC. I am interested, however, to see how Mac Jones plays for Alabama as now the full-time starter instead of replacing Tua Tagovailoa like last year. And I want to offer my condolences to Kansas State this week because they're on the road at Oklahoma. Please, Spencer Rattler, take it easy on the Wildcats. They lost to Arkansas State 2 weeks ago. They stink. Do not. Just take it easy on them, all right? Bill Snyder would appreciate it. Even though he's not coaching anymore, he would appreciate it as essentially the godfather of Kansas State football. It feels good to finally be getting back to normalcy in college football, even though my Tar Heels of North Carolina go yet another week without a game. Let's get a game scheduled here, boys, okay? Let's get a dub. On a side note, congratulations to Deion Primetime Sanders for being named Jackson State's new head football coach. He's going to try to reinvent this HBCU's program that hasn't had a winning record since 2013, and I can't wait to see what the team looks like in 2 to 3 years. A school that's produced Walter Payton certainly deserves a football resume comparable to that, essentially honor of a name, and I can't wait to see what Primetime does in Mississippi. Heading south to the Orlando bubble, we've seen things get a lot more interesting in the NBA Conference Finals. 2 nights ago, the Denver Nuggets defeated the LA Lakers 114-106 to make the series 2-1 in LA's favor. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Jeremy Grant combined for 76 points. Monte Morris chipped in 14 off the bench, and the Nuggets overcame a LeBron James 30-10-11 triple-double to win by 8. That's 30 points, 10 rebounds, 11 assists. And last night, the Miami Heat defeated the Boston Celtics 112-109 to make the series 3-1. In that Western Conference game, Denver needed Game 3 badly because they simply just could not go down 3-0 to a LeBron James-led team. That's, you just cannot afford to do that. So fortunately enough for the Nuggets, they played their best game of the series, led by double digits most of the way, and got the dub. These teams are actually a lot closer match than people think, and that's going to sound crazy. But the Lakers and Nuggets, they're not the same team, but they've got a lot of the same personnel. Game one was a solid Lakers victory. Game two came down to literally the buzzer when Anthony Davis hit a game-winning three, and the Nuggets took game three comfortably. So that's one comfortable win for each side and a buzzer beater, essentially tie, in the middle. I still think LA is going to win in six because LeBron's going to actually go into playoff mode. He's going to activate playoff mode. But I know for a fact that whoever wins this series, the Western Conference Finals, will beat whoever comes out of the East and therefore win the NBA Finals. So whoever wins the Denver-LA series, I think will end up being the champion this season, and they are the two best teams remaining in the field. Over in the Eastern Conference, we've got a similar situation brewing in the conference finals. The Miami Heat defeated the Boston Celtics last night by a score of 112-109, giving the Heat that commanding 3-1 lead I mentioned earlier. Rookie sensation Tyler Hero dropped 37 points off the bench. This kid came off the bench and had 37. The most in a playoff game by a rookie since Magic Johnson's 42 in 1980, and the most ever by a rookie in the history of the conference finals. Veteran closer Jimmy Butler made two clutch free throws down the stretch and scored 24 points. Goran Dragic dropped 22, and Bam Adebayo went for a 20-12 double-double, 20 points, 12 rebounds, as the Heat took game four. The Celtics are not out, though. Jason Tatum dropped 28, all in the second half. That was pretty remarkable. To go along with Kemba Walker's 20 and Jaylen Brown's 21, Gordon Hayward chipped in 14 off the bench in just his second game back since the seeding round. It's going to take a lot to overcome a 3-1 deficit that the Heat have right now. But as the Nuggets in the West have shown us twice this offseason, twice that is, and as Kevin Garnett once said, anything's possible. I've got Boston taking game five, but Miami ultimately closing it out in six. So that'll mean the Miami Heat playing the LA Lakers in the NBA Finals this year still. Game four in the West is tonight, Thursday at 9 o'clock, and we'll alternate conferences every night until we get our winners. And game one of the finals is scheduled to be played on September 30th, next Wednesday, in a time I assume will be about 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Now, let's move into my personal favorite segment of the podcast, Jay's Q&A, where I answer any number of questions submitted by you, the listeners, during the week. Keep an eye out for the poll I send out on my personal Instagram, at JBanzetV, and the blog's Instagram, at SCSportsBlog, for the best opportunity to send in questions. So the first question I received from Jack Disbro, my former Woodbury Forest sports camper for 2 years, asked, give some updated ACC football rankings and weekly score predictions. So my rankings for the ACC football teams right now look like this. Clemson at the top, followed by Notre Dame, North Carolina, Miami, fresh off that win over Louisville. Louisville at fifth, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, NC State, UVA, who will play their first game of the season this weekend, Boston College, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Duke, Wake Forest, and last but not least, the Syracuse Orange. As for games being played this weekend, I've got number 24 Louisville beating the 21st-ranked Pitt Panthers 34-24, Georgia Tech beating Syracuse 28-24, Duke losing on the road at UVA 17-13, Boston College blowing out Texas State in Chestnut Hill 38-13, Miami thrashing, really, Florida State in Miami 34-17, and Virginia Tech getting their first win of the season as a 20th ranked team in the country 35-31 over NC State. Next question came from Liam Desmond. Are Cam Newton's numbers inflated because he's played weak defenses so far? I will agree here that they are inflated, but that's not because of the defenses he's playing. Seattle has a really good defense, and Jamal Adams is the best safety in the league. So they've played a decent defense last week. Miami's not that great in week one, but Seattle's pretty good. The real reason Cam's numbers are inflated because nobody has film on what Cam Newton and Josh McDaniels look like as a quarterback offensive coordinator duo. They have film from the Panthers, Cam Newton, and film from 2 weeks, and you can't really get enough out of 2 weeks to get a full game plan. So we'll see weeks 4, 5, 6, and onward how teams handle Cam Newton after having multiple weeks of film to look at. But right now, they're really playing against a blind quarterback. Cam Newton is doing things that nobody's seen him do before because he's never been in New England before. So they're inflated, but not because he's played average defenses. They're inflated because teams just don't know what he's going to do yet. Next question came from Kimberlyn Bryson at St. Mary's School. Just a shout out to St. Mary's for asking a question out here. What is football? I don't even know if I want to answer that. Football is the best part of my life right now. And it's amazing, and it's the best sport in the world. So there's your answer. What are the odds a Big Ten team makes playoff noise? From Jared Bryant, my former Woodbury Forest classmate. Shout out to him. Ohio State is going to make noise in the playoff. I can guarantee you that. They will make it at least, and I think they'll make the national championship after beating Alabama in the semifinal. I've got them losing to Clemson in the national championship, but I certainly think that in terms of making noise, Ohio State will make a lot of noise in the college football playoff for sure. Bo Watts asked a number of questions. The first one here, will the Pats win over or under 11 games this year? I've got them going 9-7, and I'll read their wins and losses now. I've got them there. So they're 2-0. Excuse me. They're 1-1 right now. They beat the Miami Dolphins in week one, lost to Seattle last week. I've got them beating the Broncos, the 49ers, winning at the Jets, at the Texans, at the Chargers, at the Dolphins, and at the Jets at home again. So that will make them, actually, excuse me, that's 8-8. I thought they went 2-0 to begin with. So final record of 8-8. I've got them taking L's to Seattle last week, Vegas this week, at the Chiefs, at the Bills, the Ravens versus the Cardinals, at the Rams, and versus the Bills in week 17. So they'll finish with a record of 8-8, maybe 9-7, but certainly they will not reach 11 wins. Bo also asked, does Drew Brees finish the season as the starter in New Orleans? That is absolutely. There is no way in the world that they let Drew Brees sit on the bench in what is probably his last year in the National Football League. They signed Jameis Winston in the offseason, the man who, the only member in history of the 30 and 30 club, 30 for 30 club, 30 touchdowns, 30 picks last year in Tampa. He's the backup in case of injury. But unless Drew Brees gets hurt, there's no way he's not starting every game and probably his last season. Will the Broncos finish last in the AFC West? This really comes down to the Denver Broncos and the LA Chargers. I think Tyrod Taylor will come back for the Chargers and end up losing them more games than Justin Herbert will. So I'm going to take the Chargers in last place of the AFC West. Aussie Joseph asked me this question last week, and it's very interesting. Where does Nikola Jokic rank among centers in the 21st history? Is he the best in the game right now? I do think he's the best center in the game right now, and it's really not close. Anthony Davis, I consider a power forward, so there's your difference. But among centers in the 21st century, I've got my rankings here, the top 10. Shaquille O'Neal, Dwight Howard. Everybody forgets how good Dwight Howard was in Orlando. Single-handedly carried his Magic team over LeBron. In fact, he didn't sweep LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals. Took that Magic team to the finals, lost to the Kobe Bryant-led Lakers. So Dwight Howard at 2. DeMarcus Cousins at 3. I'll slide Jokic in at 4. Ben Wallace of the Detroit Pistons early in the 2004 era for the Pistons. Yao Ming, Pau Gasol, Joel Embiid right now, Karl Anthony Towns, and DeAndre Jordan. Those are my top 10. And so Jokic is 4th on the list because he absolutely dominated the LA Clippers. And I would not be surprised if he gets higher than DeMarcus Cousins by the time all is said and done. But he's going to be hard-pressed passing Shaq, obviously, or Dwight Howard in Orlando because Dwight Howard carried that Orlando franchise to the finals by himself. Bo Watts asked the worst 2-0 team and the best 0-2 team in the National Football League. The worst 2-0 team is by far the Chicago Bears. I don't know how they're 2-0. And the best 0-2 team is either the Atlanta Falcons or the Houston Texans. I'm tied there. Both have faced really stiff competition early on, so they'll probably – I know the Texans probably won't win this week. They're facing the Pittsburgh Steelers, but certainly both clubs will get a dub in the next 2 weeks. Carter Askins, my Camp Cheerio co-counselor, asked, will the 49ers finish with a losing record after all the injuries? I say absolutely. I've got them at 4-12, maybe 6-10. They're riddled, and I don't know what it is. Matthew Berry of ESPN said today that they haven't been hit by an injury bug. They've been hit by an injury Godzilla. They're losing everybody left and right. So you just really don't know what to expect. And so I'm saying 6-10, 4-12, somewhere in there. They're certainly not going to have a winning record. Are the Steelers a contender in the AFC? Landon Ellis asked this. He asked me to educate the Woodbury boys because he says they're not respecting the Steelers. The answer is most definitely they are a contender in the AFC. I mentioned earlier that they are the third best team in the AFC behind the Ravens and the Chiefs. They've got the best defense in the league and finally a healthy Big Ben Roethlisberger. Juju Smith-Schuster in the passing game helps, but the main story is just his defense. A season ago, this team went 8-8 with a third-string quarterback. Think about that. This team was one spot out of the playoffs with a third-string quarterback. That defense is that good. So, yes, they're certainly a contender in the AFC. Frank Bossong, another Woodbury guy, former sports camper, asked opinions on Chris Carson, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, and Cam Newton, and who my MVP is so far. I think Chris Carson doesn't get the credit he deserves when he's healthy. That's a big win. He's not often healthy, but he doesn't get enough credit when he's healthy. Josh Allen is an MVP candidate. He leads the league in passing yards right now and is on a really, really good football team. So I don't think he'll actually win it, but he's certainly going to be in the conversation. Another dude in the conversation is Kyler Murray of the Arizona Cardinals. He was my predicted breakout player of the year last episode, and he will certainly challenge Russell Wilson for the title of best quarterback in the NFC West right now. Speaking of Russell Wilson, I think he's going to be my MVP this year. He has, what did I say earlier, 9 touchdowns and 11 completions on the season. He's on my fantasy team, so I am really, really lucky to have him right now, but there is no sign of stopping that Seattle offense. They're letting Russ cook, and he is going off, so I think he's going to win MVP. And Cam Newton, my opinion on Cam Newton, he'll come back down to earth soon. I don't think he's going to have the same level of success. He's currently QB3 in fantasy football, but he will certainly win. I think he's going to win Comeback Player of the Year. He's certainly probably going to have that Patriots team in the playoff hunt when all is said and done. Bo Watts asked, Gruden haters say what? I say, they ain't saying nothing right now, Bo Watts. The Raiders are 2-0, beat the Saints last week on the road in New England. If they get a dub, everybody's going to have to shut up about Gruden's 10-year, $100 million contract. Who cares how much you're getting paid if you're winning football games? That's all I got to say. Colin Kovacs asked, why do the Cowboys suck? Context here, Kovacs is from Rye, New York. That's right outside of New York City, and he's a Giants fan. It's understandable to be a salty Giants fan these days because, number one, Saquon Barkley's gone for the year. Number two, you don't have a viable replacement for him. And number three, you've won 12 games the last 3 years. You've won 12 games in 3 years. That's the lowest number in the league. The Browns have won more games than the Giants have the last 3 years. So enough with the Cowboys suck. Just stop being a salty Giants fan. Accept that you actually do suck. Win 12 games in 3 years, and watch the Cowboys win the division. It's very simple. Wallace Hardison asks, Titans to the Super Bowl. I say under no circumstances will the Titans beat the Ravens and the Chiefs or the Chiefs in the same postseason. The Titans will, however, win the division similar to not like last year. The Texans won it last year. The Titans will win the AFC South this year, but I just don't see them getting past the Ravens or the Chiefs to make the Super Bowl. Jackson Curran asked my South Carolina versus Tennessee prediction. I've got Tennessee 24, South Carolina 14 this weekend in the SEC opener for both teams. Hugo Corciani asked, is Cam an upgrade over Tom Brady? And this is going to sound really weird, but in some ways, yes, because Tom Brady, he's old. He was 42 years old last year in New England. Cam is 31. That's 11 years difference. Cam brings a running element to that quarterback position that we haven't seen in over two decades, probably longer than that, because Drew Bledsoe was not a runner either. And Cam right now is completing 70% of his passes. That's pretty good. That's actually remarkable for a guy that size with that running ability. So Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. You can't really dispute that at this point. But for right now, for the contemporary National Football League, I think Cam actually is an upgrade over Tom Brady. Kyler Murray for MVP, ask Aussie Joseph. I said there's a reasonable chance Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson are probably going to be the two favorites at the end of the day, followed very closely behind by Kyler Murray, and I think Josh Allen will continue to sneak in there. Max Zai asked, should the Texans fire Bill O'Brien? I said, oh, Lord. Bill O'Brien does not deserve to be fired as a coach. He made the playoffs last year, but as a GM, oh, my goodness. Get him out of there. He is the only dude in the National Football League who is the GM and the head coach of a franchise. He traded away the best receiver in the league and the best player on his team for a box of cookies and David Johnson. That's inexcusable. That's absolutely ridiculous. I don't care how much you clash with somebody. You cannot trade away the best player on your team for somebody who's not comparable. They don't have to be at the same position. Just get somebody comparable. And I'm sorry, no disrespect to David Johnson, but he is not under any circumstances DeAndre Hopkins. He once was a running back, believe it or not. In 2017, he was the consensus number one overall pick in fantasy football for a reason with the Cardinals. But right now, in 2020, absolutely not their same. They're not the same player. So, to answer your question, Max, I don't think they should fire him. They should just relieve him of his general manager duties. That would solve a lot of problems in Houston. And then the last question came from Gray Andrews. Where does Cam Newton rank among quarterbacks right now? So, top to bottom, I've got Patrick Mahomes is the best. He's probably the most talented we've ever seen. Russell Wilson at number two. I have him passing Lamar Jackson right now. So, Lamar at three, Aaron Rodgers at four, Deshaun Watson at five, Kyler Murray at six, Josh Allen at seven, Drew Brees at eight, and Cam Newton finds himself at ninth. He's in the same spot, basically, as Josh Allen, Drew Brees, Dak Prescott, who I had at 10, and Derek Carr, who I have at 11, as of this very moment right now on September 24th. So Cam, ninth. He could honestly pass Brees by the end of the season, but I don't think he's going to start getting into the area of Murray, Watson, Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, and Mahomes. So right around the 7 to 11 range, probably. But I have him at ninth, Gray. And that's going to do it for the second episode of Banzette's Beats. Feel free to DM questions on Instagram at @scsportsblog for me to answer in episode 3. Have a blast watching all the sports around the world this weekend, and I'll see you next week.